Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 713. Before I even get started, let's go ahead and get to what I'm talking about. Just popped into my head. Liberty never puts up walls to keep people... That's really true. Let me go ahead and put it in there. Liberty never puts up walls to keep people out. Socialism and communism and fascism always put up walls to keep people in so that their victims can escape. Anyway, well, this is Jay Nemro. Now that I've dumped that thing, and I after I said it, I almost went, ooh, that, you know, that doesn't sound right. Liberty puts up walls. If liberty puts up walls at all, I don't think it should. They would put up walls to keep others out. And they should never do that. I don't think liberty should ever put up walls, because the invitation always needs to be there. There's going to be fights. That's nature. Those who don't think that life is fair, those that don't think, you know, that think it isn't right that under a more free governmental system, for instance, where the people are free, not that the government is free, the people are free, that they're going to do better, that they're going to prosper. There's a whole bunch of people that just don't think that's right. And the wonderful opportunity they have to say, wait a minute, we need to tax people who do well very heavily. We need to take away most of what they have. We have a lot of redistribution now. I was actually listening to Rush Limbaugh earlier. And I think he has something of a point. But you have to be really careful when you're talking about at least politics in the United States of America, you know, and everybody says, well, one side's clearly right, the other side's clearly wrong. And you can look at it from both standpoints. It's not hard to do, I don't think. You know, the Democrats think that it's full of rich people who have stolen everything from poor people, and that one of the jobs of government is to get that stuff back. The Republicans are all about giving rich people everything, basically leaving everybody else alone. I don't mind being left alone, so I tend to kind of go for this. It says, but they don't have any problem if rich people are terrorizing people. They figure that's the way it is. Republicans tend to be somewhat elitist, at least in the whole way of your economic betters. You should have to be genuflecting before your economic betters. You know, you can have your freedom, but who cares? If you don't have money, what's your freedom worth? So neither side is particularly pristine at all. Democrats seek to enslave you to a government because they say, well, at least with a government you have some chance of eking out some kind of happiness after we've destroyed all the fat cats and everything belongs to the government. That'll be better. And you go, only relatively. The Republicans are all about, or seem to be all about, you know, we need to reduce as many barriers as we possibly can. Mostly in favor of the rich, to get whatever they want to have whatever they want. You know. Trust me, the Republicans are not free and clear either. They are the party of corruption. At least the kind of corruption we have now. Now, when there's a big change, Barack Obama right now, we're about a week away from the American presidential and everything else that goes with the presidential election. Everybody goes to the polls and says, I've already voted, so you don't have to fret what I'm going to do. I've already done it. For all the good or bad it's going to do, piss-poss, doesn't matter. Let's just go for it. For all the change that Barack Obama is proposing, this is, trust me, this is not a change for the better. It's only different. You know, each time the pendulum swings one way or the other, it's also pushed toward non-liberty. You know, it just depends on which flavor of non-liberty you prefer these days. You know, liberty's never coming back. Get serious. Nobody, except for a handful of people, me included, are actually advocating for liberty. And that was why I said a little bit in the past that that there needs to be a secessionist movement. The fact that we're going to separate ourselves from the United States of America, a corrupt, socialistic government bent on enslaving people to its will, or enslaving people to the way things are. And I think, you know, people would go, oh, no, that, you know, the nation's already divided anyway. And you go, well, you don't understand what that division really is. You know, people think of the red state, blue state, Republican and Democrat divide, and it's like, that's not the one at all. Trust me. It says, a good portion of those people in both parties simply stay where they are and vote the way they do and say the things they say, not because they believe it, because they're scared to death of the alternative that the other side, if you look at the issue as if it only has two sides, and a lot of people do, you're so scared of what the other side's going to do, you go running to the opposite party, and that party says, oh yeah, look at how strong we are, look at how much support we have. And you go, that's not support. That's a little bit of support and a whole lot of fear. They don't support your ideas, they're scared to death of the other person's, what they think the other person will do. And it's just running from fear to fear. You know, do you fear large corporations sucking away your life and turning you into a gear, a cog, which is kind of the Republican way of doing things? Or do you prefer big government and a kind of weird, twisted-up welfare state that is coming, that what Democrat plans would probably lead to is a lot of welfare people sitting there watching progressively crappier television, eating progressively nastier and more disgusting bonbons. I'm willing to say that we could find some place in the middle where we can survive, but it's really obvious that that's not really going to happen particularly. You know, because what's happening is a slow, steady plodding down a whole different road. There's a whole different divide going on here. And it's a divide between those who would like to have liberty and those who have basically given up on it. And you'll find that the rhetoric is always interesting. On both sides, big corporations wouldn't survive if there was heavy socialism. You know, they would become state-run institutions. And although you can profit off such things, you know, it's a lot more difficult than just having a big corporation and just directly profiting off of what a big corporation does. Although big corporations have this amazing look when you look inside them of looking rather socialist. Except that they can get rid of you, which is one of their favorite tools, you know. And I'm not saying that we need to guarantee employment. It's like, no, we don't need to guarantee employment at all. That's not good. That doesn't promote anything good. That means people aren't going to be doing their jobs. People aren't going to try. People aren't going to go out of their way to do, you know, to get the job done well. They'll just show up. And if nothing happens, you know, it's just like the old days, you know, there was film crews, and one isn't always sure what their bias was. But there would be film crews that would sneak into Russia or East Germany or stuff like that, and they would take pictures in one of these state factories where they were stamping out something, and there would be some lady sitting there, you know, I don't want to say typical Soviet-era person, you know. Anyway, some person sitting there, they're taking, you know, a pressed piece of metal off of one thing and putting it into some carrier. And she's doing it with one hand because she's constantly got a cigarette in her other hand smoking away on it. You know, and you kind of go, is this productivity? And you go, well, not really. And it's like, well, fuck. You know, ours is better than that. And you go, well, yeah, if we keep sliding more towards socialism, no, you know. But then again, our very strong form of corporatism right now, which is highly, highly, highly supported by the Republican Party, when the Republican Party says it wants to reduce restrictions and regulations on things, it isn't because they're altruistic and because they're, you know, wanting to make the world a better place for you. That's not what they're doing. They're doing that because they're being paid to. You know? Most of the corruption cases where somebody's being paid off by a lobbyist tend to be on the Republican side, because that's their universal flaw, is that when you get cozy with big business, you know, that's how it comes. Favors come in there, favors come in that way, stuff like that. Socialists, big government, they go the other way. They tend to be enriched by power that they can have, that people willingly give up to them to save them from evil. And it's almost like this sick, twisted deal that these two supposedly opposite camps, they're in lockstep. They shake hands all the time. They're playing hand in hand, playing you. Says, and the whole point is, this is, you know, we can take turns. You know, well, I'm in power, government gets a lot bigger, and government does this, and government does that, and government makes all kinds of restrictions and things like that. But then we kind of make a deal, and we go, well, you know, we need to throw some bones at big government. at big business, you know, because we need to keep our industry going, yada, yada, yada. So, and then the Republicans get their turn, and they enrich and empower their friends, you know. Well, we're going to get, you know, and there's a lot of shuffling and dealing and you know, letting this and it's mostly that. It's letting the opposite side have what it wants, or at least saying, you know what, it all ends up working in our own, in all of our favor, because the great part is, it doesn't matter which way it ultimately goes, although each one of them hope that at some last day, last opportunity, what's ultimately going to happen is that their side will win, you know, in that push and shove and that give and take that's happening all the time where it's like, well, you know, this 4 years or this 8 years, you know, the Republicans get to have more of what they would like to have, you know, but then the next 8 years, it'll probably be you guys getting to do what you want to do, you know. There it is. So, ta-da! That's kind of the whole issue. At least for them. But the whole thing is, if you look at it from the axis, you know, you kind of have this line that goes between a Democrat and a Republican, and things slide along that line. Well, we got more Democrats this year, so more Democrat things happen, and you slide for the Republicans when there's more Republicans there. It really doesn't matter if you look at it from a whole other axis, if you don't look along that Republican and Democrat line. You can see a steady march for the last 200 years. We started out being pretty liberty-oriented, you know. Thing, people were basically free. They could do what they basically wanted to do. You know, they could acquire land, and when they had that land, they could do what they wanted to do on that land. Nobody was going to come and tell them, oh, you have to do an environmental impact study, and if we don't feel like we like what you've got in mind, we'll just reject it, and you'll never be able to pull a permit to be able to do what you want to do on this land. It'll just have to sit there. You know, government power, which is what the Democrats love, you know. Democrats love power. Republicans love money. And it's this dance that they do. You think they hate each other. And technically they do. But let me tell you, Democrats couldn't possibly pull off what they're trying to do unless they have the Republicans on the other side of what they were doing and working kind of in concert with them. Not purposefully, not, you know, I don't think there is some smoky room in the back of Congress where all the bigwigs get together, you know, on both sides of the aisle. That's what you call in the United States when they're, when you look at Congress, it's actually split in two. There's desks on one side and desks on the other side, and that's, you know, those are the two parties. You know, you might have to shuffle over a few desks one way or the other, depending on how many members there are of one or the other. That's basically the way it is. Anyway, so but once you look down that, or once you look along that line, from liberty to tyranny, I don't even know if you call it tyranny, from liberty to no liberty for people, I mean people, not government, not business, not things like that, people liberty. You've seen the steady march. It has never let up. It has never gone back the other way. It's always moved on a very nice course toward no more liberty for people. And it didn't matter who was in power. When the Republicans were in power, they didn't fight for your liberty either. They weren't interested in that particularly. If it happened as kind of a byproduct of them gaining power through money given to them by large business interests that wanted less restrictions on them or wanted new restrictions put on certain types of activity that didn't affect them but really affected their competitors, you know, that's how the Republicans work. When you go, well, Jay sounds like a Republican, you go, not really. You know, people always equate the Republicans with liberty and the Democrats with a lack of liberty, or at least a different sort of liberty. They seem to be kind of I wouldn't say for personal liberties. They're kind of for little guy liberty. Not liberties. See, they campaign as liberties too, you know. The American Civil Liberties Union is kind of a liberal type organization. They certainly side that way. But it's never about your liberty that they're concerned about. They're much more about giving the little guy more, you know, giving the little guy free stuff to buy their allegiance. You know, and that enslaves you just as surely as chains can. You know, because then you feel beholden to that person, you know, and he can come back and say, hey, didn't I give you this, did I give you that? I expect you to vote for me. And if you don't, I'll take this stuff away, or I'll try to. You know, that's kind of where the welfare state was. The welfare state was a big vote grab. None of these parties started out this way. In fact, some people think the parties started out somewhat reversed. The Republicans were more liberal. The Democrats were much more conservative at some point. But as time went on, they kind of polarized toward where they are. And it's really funny that things tend... But that doesn't matter in a liberty standpoint. Liberty standpoint is it's been a steady, constant march. I think it's actually getting faster toward a lack of individual liberty. It just is. You know, it doesn't matter which side took away some of your liberties from you. Because both of them are. Both of them are at different times for different reasons. And if you keep going, well, I'm going to go with the Republicans because I think they're going to win me back more of my liberty, you're fooling yourself. You're fooling yourself. They're not going to give you any more liberty. You know, rightly, the Democrats accuse them of trying to reduce any barrier to, you know, evil, nasty business owners from treating you like garbage. That's usually the kind of things that they want to get rid of that's really going to make big business happy. Is saying, hey, geez, I get to, you know, I get to pay people 50 cents an hour and, you know, treat them like dirt because, you know, I got rid of OSHA. You know, there's no health standards that I have to keep up with. That stuff is really expensive. I want to get rid of that. You know, all the things that are really important are somewhat buried, including the whole idea that both sides have no interest in liberty. Not that they're working together on it. Not that they get together in some smoke-filled room in the back and say, boy, how can we screw liberty today? It's just the fact that greed works against it, and it's a greed on both sides. One's a greed for money and prestige that comes with money that business can provide. The other side is power. Power that you can have because the government can just simply grab power and let you have it. You know, let you wield it. The great danger of a democracy or even of a republic is that when government is totally unchecked, and pretty much government is totally unchecked now. But that's okay. Business tries really hard to be totally unchecked, too. To perform evil. Both of them can perform evil pretty freely. And, you know, they accept a little bit of give and take on that. You know, well, okay. Anyway, so all these things, you know, the Democrats revel in that power. Of course, they have money too. It just doesn't seem as big as what the Republicans have, because their power isn't based on money particularly. It's based on having control of most of government. I don't mean the legislature. You know, usually it stays somewhat half and half. And the amazing thing is that things continue to get passed in Congress even though there's barely any majority. There really isn't one. You know, people will flee from their own party to the other side on occasion, even though that's almost a punishment that's punishable by death. That's an action that's punishable by almost death, at least political death. But, you know, but when you talk about that, you still have to go back and you have to go, nobody's fighting for more liberty for people. It's just not there. You can't count any of those two groups to do it. Although they'll both convince as they talk to each other, seeking to continue to hold the high ground amongst themselves. You know, they'll talk about, you know, the Democrats will steadfastly talk about their absolute allegiance to personal liberties, the type that the ACLU is known for. You know, that you'll be free to walk around in your town without worry about guns, which is garbage. You know, the Republicans talk the big talk of liberty on their side, but it's all about, you know, government isn't going to stand in your way, but we only do that because we don't want government standing in the way of big business. I'm bought and paid for to keep voting for big business, because big business builds my house for me. Somebody's under indictment right now up in Alaska because he had a very nice, big, huge chalet-type house built for him. And it was basically built by money that was spent by lobbyists to buy his vote. To buy on a certain issue, or on certain issues. Anyway, so both rotten to the core, both corrupt to the very center. And yeah, what little liberty there still is just because they haven't found a good talking point way of convincing you that you need to give that thing up in favor of one party or the other, you know. They're always jerking your chain, aren't they? Oh, you don't want to be an evil corporate dog, so you'll be a nice, fluffy, soft, and silky-coated liberal Democrat who's all about justice, social justice. And social justice usually means taking things from people, no matter who they are. Normally, government's only allowed to take things from people who have broken the law. Well, now that's not true. Government can take anything they want to take. And they usually take it with a smile on their face and say, this is going to make everybody better. And you go, well, now I'm worse. I'm worse off. And it doesn't matter. You're giving to a great cause, the cause of poor people. You go, well, that's nice. I would normally give to the cause of poor people, but now I don't have a choice. And I don't get to say what that does, what that money can do. You know, takes away that person's freedom. They can say, well, but you're rich. You're rich, you know, there's a whole lot of people that think the only kind of justice is taking away the freedom of rich people and giving a portion after, you know, it's been worked over and built and all that stuff by Democrats in government, you know, giving little snifters of it to poor people and then demanding the allegiance of poor people to what you're doing. Of course, that takes away everything, you know. You aren't allowed anything after that. So anyway, it becomes this whole thing about liberty and the fact that it's being taken away. And the fact that it's probably time for those who have any interest in liberty, any interest in having constitutional restrictions on government so that people might be free, because that's all government does. Government oppresses people. That's government's job. You have to have an active effort stopping government from doing that. That was supposed to be the courts doing that. The Supreme Court was basically there to rule on constitutionality. And you can see now that they really don't. Sometimes they kind of talk about it. But by and large, they just make, you know, they just fulfill their role as the ultimate court of appeals. They rarely judge on anything constitutional because nobody brings it up. If there's any evil going on, it's by and large not happening in Congress. It's happening on the periphery of that. And usually people who bring lawsuits to the Supreme, or what lawsuits to go to the Supreme Court, you know, that's where most of the evil happens. And those guys make deals all the time. Tell you what, says, if you don't sue over such and such a thing and so that this never gets to the Supreme Court and it never has to be ruled on, I promise not to bring this to the court and have it ruled on. Because that's not true. Right now we have 9 people on our Supreme Court. You know, almost every single decision they make is a 5-4 split. You know, right now there's more quote-unquote conservatives on the Supreme Court, so a lot of conservative issues are being pushed through now. You know, a lot of things conservatives would just love to bring up, but you know, it's this big, huge kind of dance between the Supreme Court justices and the lawyers that bring up these issues. It's like going on a date. You're really trying, you know, and the lawyers are trying to figure out if they can get in the Supreme Court's pants. The Supreme Court, I guess, is kind of like the girl that wants to feel secure and safe and happy and loved, and is, I don't know why she turns to lawyers for it, but that's kind of the way it ends up going. So, you know, they do this little kind of date dance, you know. The lawyers want to rape. The Supreme Court wants devotion and love. And so you kind of play this little game, you know. Is this the Supreme Court that'll let me get into their pants? If I come up with this idea, if I come up with this line to put in front of them, will they, you know, jump in bed with me? And you find it's that way. They don't just take things to the Supreme Court when something comes up. You know, oh, this is a new idea, this is a new thing, let's take it to the Supreme Court, see what they think. It's all very orchestrated. No, no, we're not going to do a thing. We're going to hold back. We're not going to talk about this issue. Sometimes it even becomes a kind of issue where It isn't even legislatively presented until the perfect time, you know, until the chemistry of Congress is right and the chemistry of the Supreme Court. You know, just in case your opposite side stops playing the game of, hey, we kind of hang back, we don't give anybody any problems until there's something we really, really want to move on, and we pick the perfect moment, and then we strike like a python or a boa constrictor. We never let go. That's kind of what happens. You know, people who are against like Roe versus Wade, which in the United States made abortion legal under many circumstances. Those who are against abortion and want to strike down that decision, you know, people think it's funny. Well, I don't understand why they don't just constantly keep it out there that they want to strike this down. They constantly keep bringing cases to the Supreme Court to weigh the constitutionality. And you go, because that takes so much effort. And if the Supreme Court does rule, it kind of steps it way down the road a bit more. You know, because you'll have to wait until all those people are dead until you get a whole new group that you think may go that way. That's why Roe versus Wade has been there for nearly 40 years. You still have people there, or you still have a kind of chemistry there, it's still kind of split. That might make it difficult. You will rarely see unanimity among the Supreme Court. The very reason is of that it will never do it. It's a very ideological group. You know, you'll never really see that. I forget how big the court used to be. I think it used to be 5. Who was it? FDR, you know, people who say he's the most wonderful guy in the world. He kind of packed it, I guess. I'm not very sure of that fact, but, you know, he was a guy that said, let's change the thing so that there'll be 9 justices. And, of course, that opened up 4 new seats, and he got to fill those. He got to be the president that decided that those seats would be filled. By who? And all of a sudden you had a very liberal Supreme Court who was, you know, who let him do what he wanted. Anyway, so that's the kind of, because that was kind of supposed to be the group that defended the Constitution was the Supreme Court. And you see the Supreme Court rarely doing that. You know, acting more like some European high tribunal war crime type of thing. I have no comprehension. We already have a structure in the Constitution for how to handle a close election, but we didn't use it. The close election is supposed to fall to the House of Representatives, who will then choose which candidate wins. Of course, nobody liked that because, you know, the Democrats have been pretty much in power there forever. So people weren't going to go for that. So they decided to take it to the Supreme Court. And you go, wait a minute, this isn't even a role for the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court didn't say that now, did it? If something comes to the Supreme Court's going to choose to rule on it. Because those guys said, oh, it's a legal matter. This doesn't have to do with the fact that there was no choice. They had all kinds of possibilities of suing, you know. When they're suing and it gets bumped up to the Supreme Court, well, that's how it works. And you go, I don't know how it got to that point. The Supreme Court's become far more powerful than it was ever envisioned or intended. It was supposed to be an equal power with the 2 other branches of government. And you go, well, no, they're not. They are the gods. There are basically 2 groups that are gods in the United States. One of them is the Supreme Court. They're absolute gods appointed by whoever who's in power that that particular moment gets to decide who gets to be a god. You know, and that was considered somewhat balanced for the simple reason that you never knew at any given point who was going to retire from the bench and make it possible for you know, people to for a new justice to take their place. Well, we've since found out that, yes, it's very partisan, and judges choose to retire from the bench at a time that will profit their ideology the most, you know. I'll do it now because the current president, I kind of like the current president, and I think he will make a good choice of a replacement for me. You know, people always talk about balance on the court, you know. Well, we had this many, you know. If a liberal-minded justice, you know, retires or dies, that's what happened last time, is unfortunately somebody died. And then so that guy didn't have a chance, or he was so ill he couldn't even work, that he didn't have a chance to make an ideological decision. You know, so people tend to stay in the Supreme Court much longer than they probably ever intended, just because they want to pick the perfect moment, the most politically charged moment, to be able to make their exit from the court. Very interesting. So even that, it was hoped, I think, in the Constitution that this wouldn't be a politicized thing. But of course it is anyway. You know, it always works out that way. So when I come up with the whole idea of a new nation, a new way of doing it, where you say, yes, we have constitutional law, I don't know if I've come up with a way or a method that's better than what we have. My only hope has always been that we would reduce the ability of that group of people, all three branches of the government, from really affecting individuals very much. I think that's very important. The whole concept of states' rights is somewhat lost on me. That was a very old struggle, because 13 original colonies became the original 13 states, and there was a battle there as to how much power the state would have and how much power the federal government would have. I would have neither of them have much. And I think it has to be very well spelled out what things neither of those sorts of government can touch, including the municipal government. I would say any form of government, and you'd have to define it, you know. Any entity that has power to coerce people to do things against their will is automatically defined as government. And once you do that, you've come to find out that a lot of things are government. Businesses all of a sudden start to take on a governmental role, and they would be just as restrictive as anything else. You would have to very strictly say, I can't force you to do anything. All I can do is see what you gave me. You know, even in business, if you had like an employee, for instance, I would imagine that would really slim down the whole thing about employees in the first place. You know, because you really wouldn't want to hire somebody because you couldn't coerce them. You couldn't make them do something if they didn't want to do it. So you would tend to more subcontract things. And it would have to be done by contracts, and contracts are enforceable. If you agreed voluntarily to do something, then you have to do it. Of course, you have to be careful about being plain and stuff like that. I would be the big one to say, nope, it's got to be, you know. I wouldn't enter into any contract that wasn't just plainly spelled out. But you have to understand, contracts among evil people always have nasty little clauses because they don't trust each other. And that's just life, you know. You can't really stop the fact that that's going to be true. But in this new country that we would be trying to set up, so I can only think that starting with a base of the Constitution that we have now would be good and would be proper, for the simple reason that the whole contention of us breaking from the United States of America is that they weren't following the Constitution. If we chose afterwards not to follow the Constitution either, then I would have to say that break was disingenuous. We only said that, just like a politician says, I only said that to get your vote, and I never had any intention of actually following it. Now, do I think we could add some things to the Constitution? Yes. Perhaps even take some things away? Yes. But through a process, basically like the process that we had, in the beginning, you would have to have 2/3 of the population agree with this new amendment. Stuff like that. We basically set up a government that looked a lot like the government of the United States of America, but that wasn't. It would be out here, out west. And if you wanted to be where freedom was, I'm sorry, you'd have to sell your house, you'd have to come. It isn't a question of, I think I should be able to do this. You go, no, it's not a question of that. You would have to go to where that freedom was, just like everybody else in the world does. In the days when America was this shining beacon of hope and everybody hoped someday to come to America to get their freedom, and we pretty much had an open border that said, come on in. As long as you don't have any weird, sick diseases, we'll let you in. I don't know, that was kind of a red herring, because people would just have to wait there on Ellis Island until they got better. Now, I don't know. I don't know what kind of weird thing. I think they used to have different, things saying only 30,000 Polish could come here. In the United States, at least in some parts, when I was young, the nasty thing to tell was Polak jokes. And it was about Polish people, Polish people were considered really low class and really disgusting and dirty and brought all kinds of weird diseases and whatever else, kind of subhuman almost. I find that funny because it really isn't now. It's something else. Polish people are actually pretty good. We kind of like them better than we like other things. I don't know what the current crop is. I hope we're beyond that, but I don't think we are. How many people really get beyond any of that? They just change their allegiances here and there. Say, well, I'm going to be like this, and you're going to be like that, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so, that's the whole idea. I don't know how you stop parties from forming. Parties are going to form. I think it's really interesting how we got this weird two-party system. And both, now, I do know that the two large parties collude together very strongly to make sure that there are only two parties. They make sure that no third party is allowed to rise. You can have third parties, but we have all kinds of weird election laws in place. We have all kinds of weird things that really make life for a third party almost impossible. But they will never be anything more than just a marginal thing. Which is sad, because the largest third party right now is called the Libertarian Party. I like its tenets. I don't like many of the candidates they put up, but I like its tenets, therefore I try to always vote for the Libertarian candidate. And tell people why I do so. Why I tend to support that. Anyway, so. Still on the road. I think I need to stop this and put a bullet in its head and go on to another episode. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 713. 13. I guess and's appropriate, but it's redundant. You don't need it. 713 says it all. If you'd like to contact me, the email address is autism, AUTISM, at Quix, QUIX, .US. Oh, God, I gotta be gone. It's okay. Alright, so, make sure and have... Where's my pointer? Hello? Hello, I tell you have a great day, but I don't see my pointer. Hello? Wow, this is weird. I can't see it. Has it disappeared? Has it dropped off the map? How do I tell a thing to stop? Here. Oh. Stop. There we go. Space. Okay, talk later. Bye.